ungabayeba kubizikiri mani na wungu muntu uzovugani
welele
ngobese yekubiza abanye abantu izilwane na bonga abantu uzovugani welele maposo yekubiza abanye abantu amakafula na bonga abantu nizokavani timela totimu yekubukwaza abanye abantu ngemimese na bonga abantu uzokhulani
from WPFW 89.3 FM, Washington, D.C. Welcome to Africa Now, a weekly radio collaboration of peoples, voices, and perspectives from the continent of Africa. I'm your host, Akenji Ndumo. On this week's edition of Africa Now, South African elections. South Africans are lining up at the polls as we speak, casting their votes in national elections that would decide the next president of South Africa. On today's edition of the program, we'll be joined by the South African ambassador to the United States, as well as Professor Bob Edgar, and also from Cape Town, South Africa, Professor Roger Whitehall, for an analysis of what's going on in South Africa right now with regards to the elections. And later on, in another segment, we'll be joined by Andile Nkletama to talk about why, if Steve Biko was alive today, he would be boycotting the elections. The South African elections and the promises of the young democracy. All that this week on Africa Now. Back to Africa Now here on WPFW 89.3 FM. On this week's edition, of course, we'll be examining all the facets of the elections currently taking place in South Africa, where voters are casting their ballots to determine the leadership of the country for the next few years. Of course, at this point, it's looking like Jacob Zuma, would be the presumed winner of the elections in the ANC, continuing to rule the country as time goes on. We will be joined by the South African ambassador as well as different analysts here on the program to look at what exactly is going on in South Africa. But as we do every week here on Africa Now, here's the news from the continent.
Good morning, this is Africa Now with headlines from the African continent. In Congo, Kinshasa, armed groups signed their own death certificate. On April 21st, 18 rebel and self-defense militia groups in the Eastern Democratic Republic of the Congo signed an agreement to dissolve their organizations, though some expressed concerns that grievances that led them to take up arms had not been fully addressed. The agreement follows a series of undertakings aimed at restoring peace to the region's restive Kivu provinces, a process that has already seen thousands of fighters integrated into the National Army. Said Apollinaire Malumalu, the coordinator of the committee that is following up progress on the various peace accords, in this declaration, all the groups clearly announce that they no longer exist. From now on, former fighters who integrate into civilian life will use peaceful means to express themselves. The spokesman for various self-defense groups known as Mai Mai expressed some reservations about the latest agreement. According to the Human Rights Watch, a U.S.-based human rights organization, they gave a cautious welcome to the declaration. The signing of an agreement is a step forward, but signatures on a piece of paper do not magically remove the problem of armed groups from Eastern Congo, said Anneke van Woudenberg, HRW Senior Africa Researcher. Follow-up committee coordinator Malumalu said these issues would be better addressed once armed groups transform themselves into political parties, as per the provisions of earlier agreements. After the security phase, we are now entering the phase of reconciliation, of community stabilization, during which the various resolutions made during peace talks in January of 2008 will be affected. The process of integrating members of armed groups into the regular army began in October of 2008. Since then, 11,482 fighters from different groups have joined the military. In Sudan, fresh clashes in Jonglei's state are worrisome, according to the UN official. In Juba, attacks by the Merli ethnic group on the Lu Nuer ethnic group in Jonglei state in southern Sudan are a new and worrisome development, the top UN official in the region warned. What we have seen recently, where we have seen attacks on civilian settlements, not just cattle raiding, is a new dimension that I find worrisome, according to David Gressley, the regional coordinator for the UN peacekeeping mission in southern Sudan. Armed Merli fighters in remote Akobo County attacked Lu Nuer villages over the weekend of April 18th, according to County Commissioner Doyak Choi. As many as 300 people were feared killed. The scale of violence and the apparently increasing number of attacks on women and children, as well as the targeting of homesteads, is causing concerns. Clashes in southern Sudan, which have occurred between rival groups, break out frequently, some sparked by cattle rustling and disputes over natural resources, others in retaliation for previous attacks. The vast and remote region provided a massive challenge to those trying to support peace efforts, according to Gressley. In order to carry out that role, we may need to be configured differently to provide protective support if required. In Ghana, Kumasi residents protest over high rice prices. The incessant increases in prices of rice products within the past 3 months have become a source of worry to many residents of the Kumasi metropolis. Some residents, particularly consumers and retailers of the rice product, have raised eyebrows over the daily increase of the price and the consequences that it's having on consumption and marketing of rice in Kumasi. A survey conducted by the Chronicle among major wholesalers and retailers in the regional capital revealed that the prices of the product have shot up tremendously within the past 3 months, with many attributing it to the depreciation of the local currency against the dollar and the reintroduction of the duty taxes on imported products. Some of the retailers who spoke to the paper in an interview in anonymity attributed the situation to the poor economic policies of the government, which they believe have led to the decline in the value of the cedi against major foreign currencies and the reintroduction of the import duties which were removed by the previous administration. They complain the situation has led to constant confrontations with suppliers who over the past 3 months have refused to supply them the product on a credit basis, citing reasons of an increase in inflation. According to residents of Kumasi, it would not be fair to blame the government for the anomaly, saying a lot of factors, including the current economic recession and reduction in production by supply country, were amongst the many reasons that have led to the increases in prices of rice products in the country. In South Africa, voters turn out with the IEC confident of a high vote record voter turnout. From Johannesburg, the Independent Electoral Commission, or the IEC, is preparing for a record turnout in today's poll, estimating that about 80% of registered voters will cast their ballots. IEC Chairwoman Brigalia Baum said yesterday the commission was certain the elections would run smoothly. "We feel this time around very confident," she told Pretoria reporters. South Africans have expressed renewed energy in the election process. Many now believe their vote will make a difference, she said. Previously, the youth were seen as apathetic and disinterested in politics, but this time they have come out in larger numbers than expected and formed a large percentage of new registered voters. The first indications of how the parties had fared was expected to be available Thursday night. However, IEC Chief Electoral Officer Pansy Tlakula said that the commission was by law not allowed to declare the results for 2 days after the election to allow politicians time to make objections. The latest the commission will announce the results will be Wednesday. While an ANC or African National Congress victory is expected, the debate this time is whether it will be able to hang on to its two-thirds majority. There is also great interest in how ANC breakaway from the Congress of the People will perform and whether it will then oust the Democratic Alliance as the official opposition. Ballots also had special security marks on them. Meanwhile, the casting of special votes went off smoothly. About 87,000 people applied for the special vote, which ends today. From Liberia, the union that won a long battle to represent Firestone rubber plantation workers has now won a labor ministry supervised vote to represent workers at ArcelorMittal's mining development in Liberia. ICEM, Affiliated Forestry, Logging, and Industrial Workers Union of Liberia, greatly assisted the union's United Steelworkers, USW, of the U.S., easily beat a yellow union in a representation election that took place in Nimba County on the Liberian Guinea-Cote d'Ivoire border and at Buchanan, a port city on the Atlantic coast. The union vote, however, encountered flagrant interference by a company official and a Liberian legislator, despite both an ICEM letter and a USW letter warning ArcelorMittal not to interfere in the election. But a boss and a national lawmaker showed up in Buchanan several hours after voting began and demanded a halt to balloting. On the eve of the vote, the yellow union was used a radio broadcast to discourage workers from voting. Election observers also reported that whoever was behind this group had pressed members of the Liberian parliament to intervene with the labor ministry to cancel the vote. Despite this and the fact that several workers did leave the Buchanan polling area without voting, FLIWUL won the fair, government-supervised election. FLIWUL got 198 votes, the Yellow Union 19, and the No Union option on the ballot received none. In Buchanan, the FLIWUL got 59 votes and the Company Union 15. The ICEM had an observer present for the vote through a designated representative from the Ghana Mine Workers Union. FLIWUL Secretary General David Sackow told the ICEM following the vote that an investigation into the Buchanan interruption is underway, but that he is confident the vote will stand. ArcelorMittal is developing Nimba County's 1 billion cubic metric iron ore reserves in a 25-year concession that will see the Liberian government receive 30% of the net profits, plus 4.5% in royalty fees. Some 2,000 Liberian workers are expected to be employed in the mining enterprise and the rail link and port hub. This northern Liberia mining area was originally operated by the Liberian-American Swedish Chemicals Company, though production ceased in 1989. With the outbreak of the civil war in Liberia. And that will be it for headlines this morning. Thank you.
Welcome back to Africa Now here on WPFW 89.3 FM. And as we heard at the top of the hour there, with the news coming in from South Africa and the voters going to the polls. Now, when the African National Congress of South Africa met for their national conference in Polokwane in December of 2007, Jacob Zuma succeeded Thabo Mbeki as president of that country's ruling party. Now, today, April 22nd, 2009, Zuma is almost set for an encore, this time taking the mantle at the helm of the nation as South Africa's third black president. As South Africans head to the polls today to vote for a president for the fourth time since Nelson Mandela was, let's face it, crowned back in 1994 at the end of the apartheid era, Jacob Zuma, the man popularly known as JZ, is widely expected to win over the other candidates of the breakaway ANC faction known as COPA, or Congress of the People, and over Helen Zille, who is a candidate of the Democratic Alliance. Jacob Zuma is certainly popular in many parts of South Africa, and his star is shining brighter than ever, even though at one point in time it was actually very, very dim under the shadow of charges of rape and allegations of corruption, the latter of which prompted then-President Thabo Mbeki to shake him off his cabinet, firing him from the post of deputy president. But what goes around, of course, and in September of 2008, Mbeki, like a defective used car, was effectively recalled from the presidency by the ruling party and replaced by interim president Kgalema Motlane. Now, in the meantime, Zuma's rape charges were dropped, the corruption charges followed suit, and the path was cleared to the top. But of course, this is not a story about individual characters, as colorful as they are. This is a story about the people of a nation of South Africa. Now, to go right into it then, we are joined on the phone today by the ambassador of South Africa to the United States, Ambassador Welile Ndlapo. As a long-time activist in the anti-apartheid movement, working alongside luminaries such as Steve Biko back in the 1970s. And Mr. Ndlapo subsequently went into exile in Botswana, and in later years went into the Foreign Service working as an ambassador to the Department of Foreign Affairs when the South African government under Nelson Mandela took hold in 1994. He has held a series of positions along the way, including Deputy Director of for Africa in the Department of Foreign Affairs, as well as he was head of the Presidential Support Unit, advising the President on conflict situations in Africa and the Middle East. Previous to serving as a South African ambassador to the U.S., he was served as a special envoy to Burundi. Now, of course, I'd like to very much welcome Ambassador Ndlapo to Africa Now. Ambassador, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for taking the time to join us on the program today. Now, you know, our program today is airing just at the time when South Africans are heading to the polls. They've been going to the polls all day at a historic moment. This is the fourth election since 1994. What is the news you're hearing from back home?
Well, people are voting, and the turnout has been quite impressive. I've been watching on South African Broadcasting Corporation, the international channel. There are massive responses all over the country. People queuing and casting their votes.
In many ways, there are these echoes of those massive lines we saw back in 1994.
Precisely. It reminds me of the long lines that we experienced when we voted for the first time in 1994.
And so you would say South African democracy is alive and kicking?
Certainly. I mean, we've got 23 million people who are eligible to vote, who have registered. And the Independent Electoral Commission is expecting an 80% voter turnout. And therefore, the fact that there's been this enthusiastic response, which in terms of registration and in terms of people coming out, which surpasses the last vote in 2004, I should come to the conclusion that indeed, our people are again exercising their civil duty to ensure that he put in place a government of their choice.
Now, with the word, you know, the vanguard of news in terms of talking about this person of choice is the front runner right now of the ANC is Jacob Zuma, who is almost said it's as if he was ordained before this election took place.
Well, the story of Jacob Zuma, it's a peculiar one, and it also reflects some of the dynamics of what happened in the ANC and the debate about the relationship between the presidency of the ANC and the presidency of the country. A debate had started whether it is still possible to have a president of the country who is not necessarily a president of the ANC. And this was sparked off by a debate that started around the possibility of Thabo Mbeki, who was then president of the ANC and president of the country, getting another term as president of the ANC.
Mm-hmm.
And that debate was closed in Polokwane, and before that at the policy conference, a position that was endorsed by the ANC National Conference in Polokwane, that indeed the ANC will still prefer that the president of the ANC becomes the president of the country. And because Thabo Mbeki had finished his two terms and would not be eligible for another term as president of the country, the choice fell on the deputy president of the ANC, Jacob Zuma. And the fact that now the ANC had decided to endorse him as a presidential candidate, it was to really emphasize the point that they want the president of the ANC to be the president of the country, number one. That despite the challenges and the problems that surrounded Jacob Zuma in terms of the charges that have been preferred against him, and endorsing their belief in his innocence,
mm-hmm.
they continue to emphasize the fact that he will indeed be their presidential candidate. Now, we have a parliamentary system. We don't need to be announcing on having presidential candidates. It is parliament that will elect a president after it has been constituted and everybody else. And then the party that has won the majority will then propose a candidate, and others can propose if they want to. Now, and then they'll vote accordingly.
Now, Mr. Ambassador, for many people throughout the continent, of course, the ANC is a household name. You know, in many ways, the ANC is a continental political party. But, of course, a party that has dominated South African politics for decades and decades, primarily because of the role they played, you all actually played in the liberation movement in that country. A lot of people look at Polokwane as a breaking point with the past dominance of the ANC. Do you see it that way as South Africa now with the ANC and two factions as more representative of a real democracy?
No, liberation movements have always faced the challenges of transforming themselves into political parties. This experience is not peculiar to the ANC. Because once you begin to get involved in the party politics and contesting elections, your character changes, your structures changes, your objectives also change, and then you begin to do things in a completely different way. But the fact of where you come from still becomes an issue, because the fact of liberation itself does not complete the whole process. There are certain other challenges in the program of the liberation movement, which had not been fulfilled, that begin to contend with the need to adjust. And that is a debate that has been taking place. That is a debate that is continuing even within South Africa.
Now,
whether the ANC should remain a liberation movement or transform itself into what is called a modern political party in order to contest elections and continue with the business of leading the country and finishing off with the task that it it assigned itself as a national liberation movement.
Now, Mr. Ambassador, I know we don't have too much time to speak, but I wanted to ask you, you were assigned as ambassador back in 2007 and for a while served under the leadership of President Thabo Mbeki. Now that Mbeki is, you know, effectively out of the way, what do you think the legacy of that president will be?
Well, President Mbeki is now having an institute that he has established, an institute for leadership based at the University of South Africa to train and organize leadership programs for the continent. So he'll continue making his contribution to the continent. He continues to also make his contribution from his experience in conflict resolution, as we have seen in Zimbabwe, and is continuing also in with the Sudan, the task that has been given by the AU.
Mm. Do you expect to see a break now that Jacob Zuma would be the new person at the helm of the country? Do you expect to see a break, specifically dealing with the work that you do, Mr. Ambassador, as you know, as an emissary here in the United States, representing the interests of the South African people here in the United States? Do you see that there will be maybe a different approach to diplomacy with the U.S. with the Obama administration?
No, there wouldn't be a different approach in that sense. But we also have to take into consideration that in the establishment of any bilateral relations, and particularly in our own experience, the chemistry at the top counts. And therefore, with all the structures being in place, what we then need to do is to ensure that that chemistry begins to develop and gel, because our work, in terms of the work that we'll be doing to foster and deepen the relations with this country, we have to be guided at the top. And that experience has taught us that is the best way to handle issues between ourselves and this country.
Now, of course, the elections, as they're going on now, it's looking like Jacob Zuma will be ascending to the presidency of the country. I just wanted to ask you then, with regards to the other political factions, I know you're a representative of the government there, but with regards to the other political factions, what role do you think the opposition, the Congress of the People now, and the Democratic Alliance, what role do you think they have to play now in you know, in the work that you do, in the work that the government does?
Well, they will continue in Parliament to be part of the processes that governs our work. They will, if they make it in sufficient numbers, also be part of the Portfolio Committee on Foreign Affairs that oversees our work and therefore looks at our budget, evaluates our work, support us in terms of our budget allocations, and of course participate in strengthening the foreign policy aspects of the work of the country, in supporting and all sorts of initiatives in terms of conflict resolution and other issues that we have been engaged in, and even in ensuring that we rectify treaties in time and fulfill our international obligations in terms of our membership of various multilateral institutions.
Mm. And so the of course the elections are coming down the wire here. I don't want to hold you for much longer, Mr. Ambassador. So when you wake up tomorrow, what do you expect then in terms of what do you expect in terms of what South Africa will be like in light of its third black president?
Well, I think by tomorrow morning, the counting would have been advanced, because all the polling stations close at 9 and the counting begins. By tomorrow morning when I wake up, I think the counting will be advanced and there will be a clear indication as to what have been the trends in terms of the voting patterns in the different areas, at the provincial and, of course, at the national level. And we'll know whether what the ANC has promised itself and its supporters, that it will garner again another two-thirds, whether that has been realized. And of course, what the other parties, the opposition, has been saying to reduce that majority of the ANC in parliament, whether that would have happened. And then we'll know for sure what is the next step. Definitely, that will indicate to us the smooth sailing in of Jacob Zuma into the presidency.
Because
depending on the numbers, then you can actually predict what is possible in terms of the election of the president when it comes to the parliament.
Well, we certainly look forward to seeing what happens tomorrow morning. Ambassador Welile Nglapo is the South African ambassador to the United States. Mr. Ambassador, thank you so much for joining us on the program today.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
And we'll take a very short break, but when we come back, we'll be joined by Professor Bob Edgar of Howard University and Professor Roger Southall from South Africa to analyze exactly what is going on behind the scenes at this election, this historic election taking place in South Africa. We'll be right back here on Africa Now.
Wozani sodlala lengoma Ungkhulele emhlatho so mina ngishaya ingoma Ungkhulele emhlatho so mina ngishaya ingoma Ungkhulele emhlatho so mina ngishaya lengoma Ungkhulele emhlatho so mina ngishaya
Welcome back to Africa Now here on WPFW 89.3 FM. I'm Kenji Ndumu. If you're just joining us right now, we've been talking about the elections in South Africa. We were joined by the South African ambassador to the U.S. And now I'd like to welcome two other guests to the program. First, by phone from South Africa, Professor Roger Southall. He is an honorary professor at this. He's an honorary professor at the department. I'm mixing them up. But he is a professor. Professor Bob Edgar is a professor at the African Studies Department here at Howard University. Professor Bob Edgar, welcome to Africa Now.
Thank you. I'm glad to be on.
Yeah, thank you. I'm sorry. I just had some confusion there. I was transplanting your university down to South Africa for a moment there. And I'm sure, Bob, you know our next guest, Professor Roger Southall, who is joining us by a phone from South Africa. Professor Southall, I apologize for that botched introduction. Welcome to the program.
Nice to be on. Yeah.
Exactly what university, if you could help me out here.
It's the University of Witwatersrand in Johannesburg.
That's right, the University of the Witwatersrand. I don't know if either of you got a chance to listen to the ambassador on the program just a few minutes ago. He was very, very upbeat, is what I would say. Bob, let me start off with you. It seems as if the mood coming out of this is one of, I don't know. It seems as if there was some resolve, but it almost seems like a done deal, doesn't it?
Well, it depends on what you mean by a done deal. I think all the indications are that the African National Congress is probably going to win very comfortably in the election. And so what we're waiting on is, what the margin is going to be. I think there were a lot of questions going into the election because of the conflicts within the ANC and, of course, the breakaway of the group that formed the Congress of the people, COPE. So there were some real questions about how the ANC would fare in the election.
Now, Professor Southall, you are down there in South Africa. What's the mood like?
Well, the mood seems to be very upbeat. It seems, although the weather hasn't been the best, that it would seem initial indications are that there has been a high turnout, which I think is good for everybody. The election has gone fairly smoothly around the country, as far as we know. There have been one or two upsets, but on the whole, it's pretty good. And so, I think people are pretty upbeat. And it's somebody said to me, it's a little bit like '94.
Mm.
There's a you know, there's an air of excitement around the country because this election is the first one really that's different. And as Bob was indicating, divisions within the ANC means that the ANC will win, of course, but this result's going to be a little bit different.
Now, of course, we keep talking about these divisions in the ANC. Maybe, Professor Sato, you could just characterize for us what happened in the lead-up to this election. Why do we have essentially two ANCs now?
Well, there was a division within the African National Congress around policy questions, around constituencies, and it led to the basically the largest trade union movement backing Jacob Zuma for the presidency, which some people consider a rather unusual choice because he doesn't have a particular Labour record, but he is a very, if you like, if I can use that overworked term, a charismatic personality, very skillful politician, and it led to the displacement of Thabo Mbeki as leader of the ANC and subsequently as president of the country. And, of course, Jacob Zuma did have clouds of corruption and a rape trial. He was acquitted of rape, but obviously that raises questions about his character, etc. So there has been a lot of division around his candidacy. Recently, corruption charges have been dropped against him on procedural grounds, but it leaves him with a little bit of a queer pitch.
Now, Professor Edgar, Professor Salto was just telling us, the auspices under which those charges were dropped were there were political circumstances. There's the question of what would have happened if this went to trial. Jacob Zuma is a very, very popular man in many ways. How do you think it is that the South African populace is easy to forgive?
Repeat the question. You're saying
I was saying Jacob Zuma, of course, has been, you know, in many ways vindicated for both the corruption charges and also the rape charges from before. On the corruption charges specifically, those never went to trial. The question of whether what would have happened if Jacob Zuma went to trial, and the question is the South African population, the ones voting and endorsing Jacob Zuma, just looking away in light of what many actually believe is his complicity in this corruption case?
Well, I think you've got quite a few varying opinions on this. Some people believe that the charges against Zuma on corruption were trumped-up charges. In other words, it was part of a vendetta by Thabo Mbeki against Zuma, and therefore the charges were always spurious. And that, you know, a certain number of people are going to believe that, and so they feel that he was a victim of a conspiracy against him. Other people, especially those who represent the opposition, are much more skeptical about the charges and of Zuma, saying that regardless of the political interference, that he really should have his day in court. And of course, the problem was if he does become president, as it does appear likely, that if these charges were still hanging over him and that he eventually had to go to trial, it would really be a very divisive issue within South Africa. So it would be extremely disruptive.
Now, speaking of division, Professor Sato, one of the one thing which we've of course mentioned here is this breakup of the African National Congress, a party which has in many ways been at the center of politics in the country since anyone can actually remember. What does the Polokwane conference that they had? What does this breakup really mean for democracy in South Africa?
Well, I think there's mixed views on that. I think that there's one segment of opinion feels that any strengthening of the opposition is a very good thing. You know, basically many people use the expression that the ANC is a dominant party or effectively a de facto one-party state.
Mm.
But the breakaway of COPE, as we call it, does mean that the ANC's hold is somewhat weakened in the, if you like, the popular imagination, and it does suggest that there's going to be something of a strengthening of opposition politics over the next 4 or 5 years. In fact, both COPE and the Democratic Alliance, the other major opposition party, have been saying that really this election is not just about 2009, it's about 2014 and a possible attempt to displace the ANC. That's probably a bit optimistic, but it does indicate, I think, that there is a shifting electoral terrain, and that the ANC's domination of politics in this country is probably going to have a limited time span.
Now, one of the central things when they talk about the differences between, not just the differences, just in terms of the cleavage, the breaking up of the ANC is the characterization, Professor Edgar, of Mbeki representing kind of the intelligentsia, the upper class elite, and Jacob Zuma being the kind of man of the people, being representative of the lower classes in the country. Is there any truth to this, and is that reflected in these two factions that we now see in the ANC?
Well, yes, I think there is an element of in that. In terms of the ANC strength, Zuma is somebody who comes from a very rural background, very limited formal education. He's somebody who's perceived as a man of the people, and many people see qualities in him that they see in themselves. And so he does have as Roger was saying, he does have a certain charisma that appeals to people of that kind of background. But, you know, there are a lot of people that stayed in the ANC who do represent the upper classes, the upper middle class, the intelligentsia, so to speak. And so it wasn't just a pure division between those two groups, an elite group and the broad masses of people. So it's much more complex than that. But there are elements of that in the breakaway.
Now, Professor Southall, this election, of course, is not only it's not a presidential election. It's also these are national elections, which have a lot of say with regards to what local representation is going to be like. Could you maybe just give us a very brief rundown of what's happening at the local level or the provincial level?
Yes. Well, there's a fairly widespread sense that the ANC will lose control of the Western Cape, which is the province which contains Cape Town, the mother city,
mm-hmm.
And that the DA will take about 40% and will lead a coalition government in the Western Cape.
That's the Democratic Alliance.
The Democratic Alliance. In KwaZulu-Natal, where historically there was a violent confrontation between the ANC and the Inkatha Freedom Party, which had a lot of Zulu ethnic support, there is a sense that the IFP has seen much better times and that the ANC will essentially take that province very easily. There are question marks over a couple of provinces. Limpopo, which is in the north of the country, is a province where COPE could well emerge as the leading party of opposition. And in Gauteng, there is quite a complex situation. That's the province in which Johannesburg is located. And again, it is thought that COPE may well displace the DA as the leading party of opposition. It's a mixed bag. The ANC will probably win 8 out of the 9 provinces, but losing Western Cape will be a big blow for them.
Now, of course, Professor Edgar, in light of that now, when we look at one of, the central mission in many ways that people believe of the black South African government when it came to power in 1994 was this issue of economic equality. And many people talk about the fact that economic liberation has not yet come to South Africa in many ways. What do we see as, the economic legacy of Thabo Mbeki, and what is Jacob Zuma poised to do about, either moving that forward or changing that for the better?
Well, that's a very good question, because there are question marks about what direction Zuma will move in, whether he'll be a populist figure who will try to address issues of poverty and appeal to the lower classes, or whether he'll sustain the very orthodox economic policies that Thabo Mbeki brought in. So there are some real question marks, and according to which audience he's speaking to, Zuma can say different things. And so he's been on a series of trips overseas to Europe and the United States late last year, for instance, where he was telling people that, you know, you shouldn't be too, he was telling investors especially that you shouldn't be too concerned about me doing radical things when I come into power. But certainly when it comes to the economic issues, that's one of the issues that it concerns people most, and that is that since 1994, the government has made some progress on some fronts, but most black South Africans have felt excluded in terms of gaining a share of the country's resources. So that does remain a major issue that the new government's going to have to contend with. And the question is, are they really going to address these issues?
Mm. Now, Professor Southall, the economy, of course, is one of the major issues, but there are also other issues that Jacob Zuma, the new ANC, or any one of the provincial governments will have to deal with, including an HIV/AIDS crisis, which is one of the worst on the continent. There's the issue of what is going on in neighboring Zimbabwe and an influx of immigrants and refugees from that country, and xenophobic retaliation in its wake. When we look at the electorate that's going out to vote today, what do we see as the issues that they want to put forward, and what makes Jacob Zuma and the ANC the candidate for the job?
Well, I think there are a number of things here. I mean, in many ways, this election has not really been about the economy, which is a little bit of a contradiction given the state of the global crisis.
Mm.
I think the election campaign has really been dominated about the issue of Jacob Zuma, and a lot of the opposition parties have raised the issue of the threat to the constitution, which they allege that he represents. So in many ways, economic issues have been swept aside by the political debate. But I think if you go down to the ground floor, ordinary ANC voters and ordinary poor people worry about delivery on the ground. They want houses, they want facilities, they want health services, etc. And I think that's the message coming from the ground floor. Foreign policy issues really haven't played any part at all.
Mm. And Jacob Zuma, of course, says he stands for three things: health, education, and crime.
Well, Jacob Zuma, you know, is, as Bob was saying, he is very adept at saying things to different audiences. Just going back to one of the earlier questions
yes.
you asked, Bob, about his backing, about the class backing, he is getting considerable backing from the black elite now, from the black capital elite. He's raising major funding from them. These guys will switch their support according to the guy in power. So I think to suggest that Jacob Zuma is coming in on a trade union background really has to be qualified.
Mm.
The ANC elite are rallying around him as the man in the position.
Well,
Can I just jump in?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think one of the things that still remains important as far as the ANC is that they're the party of patronage. And, you know, the elite is going to look at the ANC as a party that they still have to run with, because that's where they're going to get contracts and jobs and so forth. So that still remains important.
Mm. Well, we'll certainly be looking forward to what comes next. Professor Southall, when I was asking the ambassador when he wakes up tomorrow, at which point they actually finish counting, what kind of a new South Africa? We keep talking about a new South Africa, by the way. But what kind of new South Africa do we expect to see under the tenure of Jacob Zuma?
Look, I think there might be a different change in leadership style.
Mm.
He's a very different type of person and a type of leader from Thabo Mbeki. He is he's happy, as some people say, he's as happy in a leopard skin as a suit, where Thabo, you can't you just can't imagine Tabo and Becky singing and dancing on a stage in a leopard skin.
Well, he's
a completely different person whatsoever. I think he's going to give a more open style of leadership. I think the danger which he might encounter is raising expectations too high, but perhaps that's an issue which politicians have to confront virtually every time they go into an election.
Well, we'll certainly be watching for those expectations. I'm sorry we've run out of time for this segment, but I would like to thank you both so much for joining us today. Professor Southall, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you.
And Professor Edgar, it's always a pleasure to have you back on here on Africa Now.
No, I appreciate it, and I'm glad to be on with Roger.
Indeed. And Professor Bob Edgar is a professor at the African Studies Department at Howard University. Professor Roger Southall, the University of the Witwatersrand. And we go now back to South Africa by phone for our next guest, who in a recent piece makes the claim that if Steve Biko were alive today, Steve Biko would be boycotting these elections. Of course, a very, very strong claim to make. I would like to welcome our guest at this late juncture in the program. He's a land rights coordinator for the National Land Committee and activist in the Landless People's Movement, Andile Nsitama. Andile, welcome to Africa Now.
It's a big day today. In some ways, in South Africa right now, the estimation that we might have up to 80% poll, and people are saying it's as exciting as maybe 1994 when for the first time we had people voting.
So why is it that you say that Steve Biko would be boycotting these elections?
The thing is that we have 15 years of democracy now in South Africa since black people have taken over, if you like. But the conditions of black people have not changed. The majority of our people basically remain trapped in poverty, in exclusion, and in some ways the relationship of the most poor, that landless, basically the squatter camps or favelas, and the government, our state is one mediated by violence. In fact, just yesterday, 15 members of the Landless People's Movement were arrested in KwaZulu-Natal, were peacefully demonstrating and demanding to speak to government officials. So, and then I'm sure people know that also last year, 2008, around May, South Africa was a violence where black people from the African continent were killed, about 60-something of them. And this was all organized initially by the state structure, which remains racist in our estimation. It cannot be normal. It cannot be accepted that over 52% of our people are designated poor. The housing list among people are houseless, people are landless, people are poor, poverty is increasing. So it's we need, in a sense, to ask the question whether the democratic process is unfolding is consistent with the vision of Stephen Biko, which was about total liberation of black people.
Now, I apologize, Sandile, we don't have too much time here, but when we look at when the new South Africa came into being in 1994, there were a lot of compromises they had to make, and some people would argue that those compromises are what has allowed the country to be at least politically stable, if not for the fact that they've seen those economic gains. What do you say to the fact that they had to make these compromises in order to?
Look, that argument does not hold, quite frankly, in South Africa, because if people remember, 1994 was marked by major violence.
Yes.
And in fact, the violence was not necessarily stopped by the compromises, and the compromises were not necessarily fought when the political leaders were negotiating. However, on the third election, the ANC had 2/3 majority, which means that legally, constitutionally, it could have changed those compromises, such as protection of property, if you like. It didn't.
I'm sorry, we have to. Yeah, no, go on. Just finish that thought, because we have to close out.
Okay, no, that's fine. There is a myth, the idea that we have the little stability that we have now as a result of compromise. In fact, South Africa is not stable. If you look at the violence that we see every day that is associated with crime, or simply the violence again among the poor, the violence of exclusion, this is not really a stable country.
Mm. And Dile, help me with your last name.
Oh, my name is Minotama.
Okay.
You said it quite well. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. He is an activist with the Landless People's Movement. Thank you so much for joining us today on Africa Now.
Okay, good.
And that would do it for our program this week. We'd like to thank our executive producer, Elaine Awalam, as well as our engineer, James Dubek. And I'd like to just close out with a word from our last guest, Andile, who in his Facebook status message is talking about what he'll be doing in celebration tonight. He says he's going to see if there's a party going on with a NOPE, which is an organization boycotting the elections, and otherwise he will go to an ANC party. If they can't give us a better life for all the Mar, at least they can goy a nice party for a few. Not too bad, actually. Andile from South Africa. And that does it for Africa Now this week. I'm Akenji Ndumu. Stay tuned for Don't Forget the Blues with Steve Hoffman here on WPFW 89.3 FM.
WPFW welcomes your feedback, favorable or otherwise, on this just concluded public affairs program. To do so, simply email your comments to info@wpfw.org. That's info@wpfw.org. Thanks.